Ben, is anybody else coming down? No? Okay. So, friends, could you please be here? Just forget about going away. Spiritual practice, total and absolute presence in each moment is very important. Don't try to do now what you should be doing in 2 hours' time. Yeah? Be here. This gathering depends upon your participation to make it happen. It's already happened up to a certain level. A certain work has already been done. It has not been completed. And depending upon your participation, which means your attentiveness, your presence, your awareness, will depend on what level of completion it can be done. It is like a note. The more complete, the more exact pitch it becomes, which means the greater the resonance. And the note we have been playing here belongs both to time and space and also to beyond time and space, and that is quite unusual. Normally in spiritual gatherings it happens in one place or the other, either out of time and space in the dimension of the soul or in time and space in the body. But we have been striking a note in both places at the same time. This is very rarely done. So it needs your attentiveness on both planes of reality. This world has been denied divine presence for too long. I was sharing with some friends in Switzerland recently an experience I had in Berlin about 5 years ago, just after the wall came down. And I was lecturing at a conference in what used to be East Berlin, and the wall had come down for a year. It was an international peace conference. And I was astounded because although the wall had come down, the moment one crossed into East Berlin, the whole visible spectrum became colorless. It was gray. I had never experienced anything like it. It had nothing to do with the physical plane, because on the physical plane, things had been redecorated, coats of paint had been applied, the buildings were the same beautiful buildings that had existed in Berlin. On the inner planes, it was colorless, it was gray, it shocked me. And the only explanation I have been able to come up with is because it was part of a culture that collectively denied the divine. And we have denied divine presence. We have identified with the divine as a transcendent reality to the exclusion of her incarnation. This has been necessary in the evolution of human consciousness. This awareness of a monotheistic divinity beyond even our idea of the beyond, that later became personified into the image of a father figure that belonged to the whole patriarchal time of evolution. That is over. The world cannot afford divine absence anymore. We have the privilege of being able to reconnect the transcendent divinity, the unnameable essence. The Sufis say, in the name of He who has no name, who cannot be named, that which is beyond even our idea of the beyond, and the present moment in time, in the body, in this world. We are working on a very high frequency of consciousness. that is not normally available on this plane of reality. It has been given to you. Part of the work of this conference was to make it accessible to you. It has to do with bringing the two worlds together. Reconnecting the inner transcendent aspect of divine reality to her manifestation in this world, in which the divine can be known in a new way. And only God can redeem her world. This is so important to realize, because this belongs to the basic Sufi principle of total and complete surrender. Sufism means to surrender to God. It is His will be done on earth. And His world, her world, can only be redeemed through the divine. This is so fundamental. If we try to do it without the divine, we can't do it because it belongs to the divine, because the problem was caused by divine absence. You cannot heal a problem unless you go to the cause of the problem. And the cause of the problem was a transcendent divinity that became excluded from this level of reality. So the colors began to fade. So the memories of divine presence that were in the blood that had been carried for millennia began to fade. So mankind became alone in this world. And we are all helping each other. This is more important than you realize. Orders were given for this conference to take place. It was not my idea. I resisted it very strongly. As Andrew well knows, I am an introvert. I like being left alone. But orders were given to create an opportunity for different Sufi orders to come together to begin a certain work of weaving together the two worlds, weaving it together with love, with prayer, with practice, and with presence. This is why we have come together in a physical space, in a physical time. Although, as I mentioned before, for centuries, the majority of Sufi work has been done outside of space, outside of time. Often because one was persecuted if you brought it too close into space and time. Luckily, on the external physical plane in North America in the 21st century, one cannot be persecuted. This is, again, more important than we realize. There are many places in the world where one would be persecuted for even talking about it. Only recently, first of all, the communists and then the fundamentalists killed many Naqshbandis in Afghanistan, also in Bosnia. This is not ancient history of the 12th or 13th century. This is the present time. Whatever the limitations of North American culture with its addiction to consumerism and greed and an incredible masculine hierarchical power structure, it has this gift of total freedom of religion, which you take for granted, but it allows certain things to happen here, a certain work to be done here, that cannot be done so easily, so freely, and so visible in other parts of the world. And the divine needs to be made known in a visible way in this world. We recently, in the Sufi Center, got an email from some young students in Romania. And they said, you don't know how difficult it is in Romania, where one can hardly even talk about spiritual things. where the books and materials are not available. They wanted some books, so we will send them to them. They said very beautifully, "We are students. In Romania, it is so poor to be a student. You don't want to be a student in Romania." They said, we are rich in spirit, but the wind is the one who fills our pockets. So certain things can happen here in this space, in this time, that have to do with divine presence. And our work as Sufis have always been to help the divine to reveal itself where it is needed. That is why at different times over the centuries, Sufis have congregated in different parts of the world. It might seem to have to do with political pressures. But was Rumi really in Konya because of Genghis Khan? Or was Rumi in Konya because of the destiny of Konya? Because that is where a certain work needed to take place at a certain time in the evolution of the planet. Now, what is very important and has often been overlooked in this country is if one is dealing with divine presence, one has to acknowledge, one has to respect the ancestors of this place. There is a certain reason why many spiritual movements have flourished in America but never grounded. And that is because they were never welcomed by the ancestors of the place. And the ancestors, of course, is the Native American spiritual tradition. When Mrs. Tweedy first came to the West Coast in 87, we had some meetings in a church. They were open meetings. And the very first meeting, there was a Native American man of power. And Mrs. Tweedy recognized him and welcomed him. And the very last meeting, a month later, he was also present. And Mrs. Tweedy asked him to speak to us. And when Barbara came here a year ago to begin to make arrangements for this conference, the very first person that she met was a Cherokee. This is more important than you realize. Because the Native Americans have held in their culture, in their conditioning, the symbolic structure of this land. Just like we have the symbolic structure of our own psyche, and we have to respect our own gods, our own goddesses, if we are to do real inner work. Otherwise, it never gets grounded. It becomes a New Age flutter. So the same thing is needed. Is part of grounding the will of God. The opportunity is always there, but it is time for it to become conscious. It is time for you to know that we have been accepted, we have been welcomed. And part of this was also at the last conference, which was at the very end, somebody handed me this very beautiful Hopi poem, which moved me so much because the Hopis really are the ancestors, the spiritual ancestors in this country. They have been in their mesas for a very long time. And at the end of this conference, I was given this poem, which is the message of the Hopi elders. For the beginning of the new millennia. And what moved me so much is in their words, they lyrically described exactly what the work we have been doing. That shows we are in tune. That we are working for the same aim together. And that is why we have a collection for them. To make our contribution also, not just on the inner planes, but also on the physical plane. To honor something which they have carried for centuries, and they have been dishonored because they honored it. And they carry the magnetism of sacred space. In North America, nothing can happen without a recognition of sacred space. This is quite different to Europe. In Europe, sacred space is not so important. Each country, each continent has a different spiritual dynamic that has to do with the energy structure of that continent and the people who have lived there. In North America, sacred space is very important. Otherwise, nothing can take place that lasts. It may appear to last. It is a bit like Christ's parable of the sower and the seeds that go on stony ground that flourish up for a moment, but don't last. So I'm going to read you this poem and talk a bit about it. And listen as Sufis, both with your mind, with your heart. And I tell you at the beginning, part of the important message of this poem and even the giving of this poem is the different worlds coming together. And these are like seeds. You hear what I am saying now. In 20, 30 years' time, you will begin to grasp what it means. You can't understand it now because it is too new. It hasn't been done before. And your mind only has the concepts of the past. And what I have become aware of very profoundly is that the concepts of the past and the mind structure of the past only helps us to see what has already happened. And what we are being given, what we are being asked to participate in, what we are being asked to witness, and Sufis have always been witnesses, belongs to the divine presence, belongs to the moment that is now. The signs of God are being revealed in a new way. And we need to see them with eyes uncluttered by the images of the past. Awaken to what is now. And as Sufis, we are trained to do that because Sufis are known as the children of the moment. All our practices are about divine presence in the moment or divine absence in the moment. I've always been amazed about doing the zikr. You do the zikr for many years, which means you repeat the same word over and over again, how many thousand times a day, with each and every breath. And each time it is for the first time. It doesn't belong to the memory of time, because you call upon the name of your beloved. And love does not belong to time. That is why Sufis can work inside and outside of time, because we work with love. And love does not belong to time. You know that on your own experience, because if you are in love with another person, you often forget time. That is because love does not belong to time. It is alive now. It is given now. It works now. No. 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 See not. You disturb my train of thought. So, message from the Hopi elders, New Year 2000. To my fellow swimmers, there is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel they are being torn apart and will suffer greatly. Know that the river has its destination. The elders say we must let go of the shore. Push off into the middle of the river. Keep our eyes open and our heads above the water. And I say, see who is there with you and celebrate. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. For the moment that we do, our spiritual growth and journey comes to a halt. The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves. Banish the word struggle from your vocabulary and attitude. All that we do now must be done in a sacred manner and in celebration. We are the ones we have been waiting for. This poem is so important. It says so many profound things in the simple, clear imagery and wisdom of the Native American tradition that we are part of because we are here. Because they carry the sacred energy of place. Those of you who have ever been to the Hopi Mesa, there is an interesting experience I had when I drove there years ago, is you suddenly cross over into their land, and the moment you cross over into their land, you know you are in sacred land that is held in a sacred way. It is a very moving experience. You're just driving through the desert, and suddenly the atmosphere changes, and you know you are in Hopi territory. And their work has been to keep this tradition and to give it back to us ignorant white people when we need it. Just as the work of the Sufis has been to hold a certain mystery of love in secret for humanity. Sufis are known as the people of the secret. And then to give it back to humanity when it is needed, as it is needed, in doses that will not disturb them too much. But look at the beauty of this. At this time in history, we are to take nothing personally, least of all ourselves. As I was talking about yesterday, one of the difficulties that happened is the spiritual energy that came to this country in the 70s, it got caught up in the self-development movement. And for, sadly, a lot of spiritual work ended up focusing on self-development, which it wasn't intended to. Because spiritual life is not about us. It is about being taken to a place of surrender where we merge into God. The inner work is important so that we can get out of the way. Sufism is not about having a fulfilling life. It is about serving God. There is a big misunderstanding about that. It is time to clear it up. Otherwise, a certain work cannot take place. The energy that is being given to us, and as Sufis, we reflect it into the world. If the mirror is being focused on ourselves, it cannot get reflected into the world. That light, that love, does not go where it is needed. And we are allowed to lighten up certain things, to give energy where it is needed, because a lot of energy in this culture has been caught. It has particularly been caught in patriarchal power structures. They are very, very, very powerful in this country. This country is the most powerful country in the world. It can sell anything to anybody. It can make anybody buy anything they don't want. And there is a way to undo this knot. So this energy, so this power, so this potential can be given back to humanity. It has to do with creating an organic structure rather than a hierarchical structure. It has to do with undoing certain knots of energy that are caught within this hierarchical structure. It has to do with creating a free-flowing, organic, dynamic container. Somebody recently had a dream, they said, shared to me. Very beautiful dream. Last night, I had a dream. I, or we, those among who I am, have to watch over something that contains the substance, the essence of God. There is much ordinary life going on and we are involved in it. But I only dimly remember because I have to concentrate so much on this something in order not to lose the link, the focus. The task we have been given is very important, but very, very difficult, almost impossible to perform. This something somehow has a form, but not a form in a proper sense. It is an ever-changing container. I can see it, and at the same time, it can't really be seen. It is very difficult to grasp. What I clearly remember is the knowledge that this something contains the substance of God, the task given, and the immense effort necessary in order to try not to lose the focus. This is an organic container. It moves, it changes. It is not a structure. And it contains the essence of God. And Sufis have always worked with the essence of God. And it needs to be given back to humanity, not just in secret circles. It needs to be given back to the collective of humanity. A few years ago, I had a very moving experience in Seattle Airport. I was waiting for a change of planes. And you know in those waiting rooms and everybody is waiting for the next plane. And people are talking on their cell phones and reading their papers and gossiping and eating sandwiches. It's full of disturbance. And suddenly a veil was lifted. And I saw or was shown how every human being is full of God. Totally full of God. Like an essence, like a substance from the tips of their toes to the top of their head. And I saw that what was the mystery was not that they were full of God, but that they didn't know it. It was extraordinary watching these people full of God, talking on their cell phones, reading their newspapers with no awareness that they were God. And it is not that humanity has to be given its godliness back, but that it needs to be made aware that it is divine. Because only when humanity collectively reclaims its divinity can a certain work of transformation happen to this planet. Because this planet belongs to God and humanity is the guardian of this planet. And a connection needs to be made between the consciousness of humanity and the consciousness of the divine. And mystics for centuries have carried the consciousness of the divine for humanity. This is different to the consciousness of God, because mystics are different to spiritual people. Spiritual people carry a concept of the divine. It is a very good work. It is usually righteous. Sufis are not righteous people. They transcend good and bad. They know how to work behind the scenes of creation. They can be infused with the nothingness of God, with the emptiness of God, which is much, much more powerful than any concept of God because it is not limited by form. And mystics have carried that for humanity. Somebody needs to carry it. That is why, for example, it is said a Sufi is not made but is born. One comes into the world with this work to do. It is already imprinted into the heart. And at the right moment in the life, it is woken up. You know this story of Rabia tells about a man who comes to her and says, "If I do good works and turn towards God, will God turn towards me?" And Rabia said, "No, never. First, God has to turn towards you. The imprint in the heart has to be awakened by the finger of God." For centuries, mystics have lived, although often in the midst of life, they kept their secret hidden. In fact, the great Sufi Junaid, he said, the reason Al-Hallaj was crucified is because he'd revealed this secret and it shouldn't have been revealed. They made him taste the blade because he had revealed the secret that had been entrusted to him. This secret substance needs to be given back to humanity, to the consciousness of humanity, so that it can reclaim its own divinity and the world can be transformed, because the world can only be transformed by the consciousness of humanity awakened to its divine nature. We have such a little understanding of consciousness in our culture. We don't even know how human consciousness interacts with the energy structure of the planet, how it flows through human consciousness. We have no idea how our thought forms affect the well-being of the world. Human consciousness is extraordinarily powerful because it is His gift to humanity. It is stamped with the name of God, and then the name of God is covered up. Human consciousness, in which the name of God is uncovered, has the capacity to do His will on earth, to bring the divine into manifestation in a way that it is revealed as the divine. And we have forgotten in our culture that this world is a place of revelation. We think it's a place of work and effort and having a job and raising a family. The animals do that much better than us. They don't cause so much trouble. And they don't have psychological problems about it. That was never our work. Our work is to reveal His wonder, to see the face of God wheresoever we turn. Have you any idea what would happen to this world if that becomes part of our collective consciousness? How the world would start to spin faster and faster, how a certain song would come alive, not just among the few who are devoted to God, but in the midst of humanity. We have such a little understanding of how we are connected to the earth. We think the earth is something we walk upon. No. It is even more than something we breathe. It is something we are part of. We are organically connected. We are consciously interwoven with the energy structure of the planet, with the way life comes into being. Our thought forms determine how life comes into being on this planet. And the reason that life, for many people, has become a bit meaningless, or a place of just work and effort, is because we have forgotten why we are here. Just like those people in the airport lounge, they didn't realize they were God. It was so extraordinary. It was so obvious they were God. And it was such a wonder, they didn't know it. And what is beautiful is many different spiritual orders, not just Sufi, are coming together to do this work, because this work needs to be done together. This is why I found it so moving in the Hopi poem when he says, "The time of the lone wolf is over. Gather yourselves." This is a gathering. We can't do this work on our own. Yes, the inner journey of the soul will continue, the journey of the alone to the alone, the ancient journey of the seeker going back to the source, of walking the dusty road back to God, the journey home. Yes. With His grace, with the guidance of our superiors, we will begin to unveil what has been hidden within ourselves. We will be graced or tormented by the path. Yes. But that is no longer the focus of our spiritual practice. We are here to help the world become alive, to bring the divine names of God into creation where they are needed, to bridge the gap between the two worlds. Actually, the two worlds have already been bridged. What is happening is they are beginning to merge. And this merging needs to be witnessed, needs to become conscious. If it is conscious, then certain things can happen that cannot happen if it is not conscious. It is happening, but many mysteries happen unconsciously. T.S. Eliot writes, "We had the experience but missed the meaning." Human consciousness has a very important part to play. And in order to make this step, one of the things we have to do is to get rid of the idea of we are children and God is a parent. That was useful for a while, 1,000 or so years ago probably. Now it creates a split in consciousness between here and there. And it doesn't allow us to own our own dignity, our own power, our own potential, our own divinity. Nobody is here to tell us what to do. And this is again very, very beautifully put at the end of this poem. We are the ones we have been waiting for. We are the ones we have been waiting for. The future has already arrived, we just haven't noticed it. We keep on expecting something to happen, not realizing it has already happened. We have just been looking in the wrong direction. And we can help each other, we need to help each other. We need to know that we are part of a network of lovers of God, who are held together by this membrane of love and light. I describe how a friend saw this. "I saw a nearly round golden net against a total blackness. It was made of extremely fine golden wire, and the threads which went to the center were at some points folded or bent into Arabic writing, which I couldn't read. But somehow I knew that it had to do with the aspects of God. The center was an empty circle or octagon. The threads which crossed the spokes were without writing. Only the spokes carried the aspects. And the octagon is of immense significance. In the past age, 7 was the archetypal number. In the next age, in the age which we are already present, the archetypal number is 8. In each step for humanity, a new archetype is added. There was a time when 6 was the archetypal number. And long before that, 5. It has to do with the evolution of consciousness in humanity. And number 8 is the flowing between of the two worlds, of the inner and the outer. This also has to do with the sun and moon coming together. And many people in different parts of the world are having dreams of the sun and moon coming together, the masculine and feminine, the inner and the outer mysteries. And what is quite remarkable is some things that are hidden are going to be revealed, and some things that have been revealed will be hidden. Not everything should be known at the same time. And that is why one has to be totally present and forget all of one's spiritual concepts, because they belong to the past. A year ago, I had to go through this process within myself. Suddenly, I realized that every concept I had about spiritual life belonged to the past. It didn't work that way anymore. And I had been doing a lot of spiritual work for many, many years. And one can get attached to one's spiritual concepts. They tell you how it works. It doesn't work like that anymore. The energy structure of the planet is changing. It is flowing differently. If you look in the spiritual past of the planet, you can see that. There was a time when certain places, for example, Stonehenge in England, the pyramids in North Africa, contained or were places of tremendous power, transformative power, to help the evolution of the culture at that time. Buildings were made in that way. It doesn't work that way anymore. There's a wonderful place in England called Glastonbury, that belongs to the previous age, and people are still there waiting for something to happen there. It isn't going to. This spiritual container is being woven through the hearts of those who belong to God. It is coming alive in the mass of humanity. It's very important to realize this. It works differently now. There has to be a new way of doing things, and yet also that belongs to the tradition. From a Sufi point of view, for example, my Sheikh Baisab, when he sent Mrs. Tweedy back to the West, he said, certain things can be changed, but the essence of the tradition can never be changed. Because it is through the tradition that the transmission is given. And the transmission is a particular energy that comes from a higher frequency to a lower frequency that is needed for spiritual transformation. The Sufis call this seer, the secret of the universe. You cannot do transformation on your own. You need this substance. Otherwise, nothing happens. You can do every inner practice and diligent work for 20 years, 30 years. That is why there is this Sufi saying, ancient Sufi saying, that you gain more by being in the company of Sufis for 10 minutes than you do by 10 years of ascetic practices on your own. And what is very beautiful is this substance, seer, that was only given to individuals when they had reached a certain level of awareness and certain level in their practice, can now be given to collective humanity. You don't have to know how it works. You just have to know that it can be done, and it can be done differently. The essence is the same. The tradition, the essence of is always the same. Just as the different Sufi orders will remain, they are different frequencies of love that are needed for different souls, because souls are different. And the different Sufi orders have been designed to activate different souls, to feed them with the nourishment of love and light that comes from the inner planes that they need to do their work in the world. No one path is better than any other path. It has to do with the soul. It is the soul that attracts you to a path. You may not like it. You may rather be on a different path. But certain permission has been given for things that were kept hidden to be revealed. For a certain energy that used to be only given to initiates to be given collectively. And it is being done at certain places in the world, in certain time, in certain conditions. And how it is done, and even more important, how the people to whom it is given respond, will determine the next stage of evolution. We are the ones we have been waiting for. It is so simple, it is so profound. But don't take it too seriously. Otherwise, you conceptualize it. Otherwise, you limit it. That's why Sufis are tricksters, because it is always different to the way you think. One of the great, great Sufis, Dul Nun, he said, whatever you think, God is the opposite of that. The moment you take it too seriously, you want to define it, you want to try to do it. And the wonderful thing about real spiritual work is it does you. It is said, for example, first you do the zikr and then the zikr does you. Only when it does you does it have real effect. It goes into the unconscious, into the psyche, it transforms the whole being. Very powerful practice. You have to let yourself be loved. You have to let yourself be taken to God. This, of course, again has to do with reclaiming the feminine. We all want to do, it is part of our problem. We've forgotten the mystery of being done. That's why I like the gamblers who are going to do this woman walking along the path. If you want self-control in your life, keep away from the Sufis. If you want to know where you're going, follow some other path. Sufism is about being alive to the divine. And for the Sufis, it is a love affair. We must never forget that. It is our own beloved. We have to claim it for ourselves. You can do all the practices in the world, you can pray, you can meditate. But if you don't live this love affair, this passion of the soul, it is pointless, it is a waste of time. There are servants among my servants who love me, and I love them, and they look towards me, and I look towards them. If you knew what an honor it is to be able to do this work for love, for the beloved, just to be here for him. Don't try too hard. If you try too hard, it is your effort, it is about you. If you try too hard in a love affair, it's not going to work. It is about your heart and the beloved. And of course, the greatest mystery is your heart is the beloved. He reveals himself within the hearts of those who love him. And what is wonderful is he is beginning to reveal himself in the world around. You know, I am an old monk, an old ascetic. For me, meditation is primary practice. I started meditating when I was 16. I had this Zen koan that woke me up. And I always expected all of my experiences to come in meditation. Because to me, that is what you do. 4 or 5 hours a day, you know, this is serious stuff. And when I came to America 10 years ago, and I was wandering in the footpaths, we live near a national park, and suddenly I began to see in the nature around me his oneness. I didn't expect it, you know. But suddenly everything around me became one. Yes, I could look and see that each leaf, each flower was different. But then I looked again, and it was all part, it was all one. And each day I would go back, and it would all be one. And my mind would say, how can this happen? And it was all one. And then it began to gradually seep into all of my life, until everything became one. It was so unexpected, because it came from life. I'm an old renunciate. I thought it would come from the absolute, from the transcendent. I had to be changed. Somebody had to show me, no, it doesn't happen that way anymore. Certain spiritual practices that used to take you to a certain spiritual space have been closed. There used to be a way to go through emptiness that has been closed. I know, I've seen the lock on the door. It doesn't work that way anymore. It has to happen through life. It has to do with a certain chemistry that takes place when the energy of the inner hits the energy of the outer. This is where the transformation is taking place, in the midst of life, when the energy from the inner planes hits the outer planes. There is a certain spark, and in that certain spark you can see the name of God. I will repeat that. I didn't know it until now, you see. It's true. The energy comes from the inner planes, comes from the unmanifest, down through the planes of manifestation. And our practices align us with this current of energy. And when this current of energy hits the denseness of the outer world, and we live in a very dense outer world, particularly those of you who live in New York. There is a spark. It is like when a hammer hits a stone. There is a spark. And in that spark, you can see the name of God. You can see the face of God. That is where revelation is taking place. Not in the mountaintop, not in the desert. Not in the hut of the hermit, but in the midst of life. Why? Because that is where we are needed. It's the carrot and stick treatment. We are needed in the midst of life, so he reveals himself in the midst of life. That is where transformation is going to take place. That is where the energy is. Go where the energy is. Go into the midst of life. Forget about your spiritual desires. They belong to the past. It has to be lived now in the present. Only then can the world turn. Something needs to be shifted in the whole global structure. Only a little bit, too much, and the whole structure would fall apart. It is being very, very carefully watched over. The friends of God I was talking about, they are watching it very, very carefully. It has to do with tilting the energy structure of the planet a little bit. Too much, and the whole structure falls down, and we have to start again. That has happened in the past, yes. In fact, Sufis were involved in, for two centuries, rebuilding what happened when Genghis Khan came. He wiped out 200 years of civilization in a couple of decades, destroyed everything. But there is the possibility that this transformation can happen within the power structures of the present, very subversively, from within. And people have forgotten how powerful divine consciousness is. We think it depends upon us, our will. It never depended upon us. But we have to participate. We have to be part of this unfolding. I think it is a tremendous honor and privilege to be part of this transformation. To be here at this moment in time. It's very difficult because you have to hold the opposites together. It was much easier in India in an ashram. I remember the mountains of Tibet very well. There were only spiritual thoughts. There were no hamburgers. There were no advertisements. It was a very, very fine, refined atmosphere. You could meditate all day, all night for a week. Nobody disturbed you. You didn't have to work for a living. It was provided. But we have been asked to come back in the midst of the most materialistic culture that has ever existed. For his sake. We wouldn't do it for our sake. It was so much easier then. A little hut, a bowl of rice a day. Well, that's my fantasy. And there is real evil present in the world. We are not allowed to live in sanctified places protected from evil. There are forces trying to stop this transformation happening. There are enormous vested interests. They are very, very powerful. Of course, they don't have the will of God. They don't know they don't have the will of God. And we work subversively. Sufis have always worked subversively. Like Rumi says, he comes like a thief in the night. Through the back door we leave always open. And there is a wonderful back door in humanity. Everybody wants to be loved. You go to the top of the corporate structures, to these big bosses with their big cars. They too want to be loved. Everybody wants to be loved. Everybody has a soft, tender spot if you know how to find it. If you know how to speak to it. There is a way to speak to people's hearts. It melts them. Mrs. Tweedy had this wonderful ability. She could speak to an audience of 600 and make love to it. And everybody thought she was talking just to them. There is a way to talk to people's hearts. And you can get anything done you want, you know. Because everybody wants to be loved, and we work with love. We even destroy our enemies with love. People don't know what to do with love. It is so invisible, it is so powerful, and it wants nothing for itself. This is very important. If you want nothing for yourself, nobody can touch you. The moment you want something for yourself, you will get into all sorts of trouble. If you want nothing for yourself, then it doesn't matter. You are free. So you have nothing left to lose. But somehow we have forgotten what it means to belong to God. To know we belong to Him. We belong to Him. You don't have to work too hard. If you work too hard, it's about you. My sheikh, he said, too much effort, it's not spiritual. I think people in this culture work far too hard. There is a way to work with the currents of love as they come into the world. It is very beautiful. You learn to watch, you learn to wait, you learn to move with the currents of love. To go where you are needed. Path of least resistance. Fight when you need to fight, yes. But if you don't need to fight, why bother? We don't have to convert anybody, we don't have to preach to anybody. We just follow the currents of love. How do you do it? You see, I told you that the old ways don't work anymore. And the new ways haven't been written. And we're a kind of how-to culture, aren't we? We like to get a how-to book, you know. 10 steps. It's one of the reasons my books don't sell very well. Well, I have discovered or been shown something very interesting, which is that the energy that is now coming into manifestation, and particularly the energy of love, has all the instructions needed written in it. It's encoded into the energy. You don't need to know anything. You just need to be present, to be attentive. It is there. For example, I am no longer allowed to prepare any talk I give. I did one for Boulder, the 12 stages of initiation, because they needed it in Boulder. But apparently very good talk. But I'm not allowed to prepare anything more, because it has to be just as it is present at each moment in time. It is a bit like reading a teleprompter. It is quite an interesting experience. As long as I am attentive and you are attentive, the teleprompter is there. Everything is present. It has to do with oneness, because the energy we are being given is an energy of oneness, of divine oneness. And in oneness, everything is present. Everything is, of course, always present. But it is not, now it has been made present on a level of consciousness. Or rather, our ability to tune into this level of consciousness has been given to us. There is a plane of oneness where all the knowledge about everything exists. And if you practice meditation for many years and you have a good teacher, you can reach that plane. Everything you ever need to know is there. Of course, by the time you've done that, you don't want to know anything, so. It is a particular frequency, and it used to be given only to initiates, or only initiates were allowed access to it. Now it is being given to humanity. It has to do with the next stage of human evolution. And one of the first ways it is coming into accessibility is through love. And through the consciousness of love, because love is oneness. Love is divine oneness coming into the world. That is why, for example, in a human relationship, when you are in love, you want to merge with that other person. You want to get closer and closer and closer. Even to physically unite with that person. Because love is an energy of oneness. Love draws you into oneness. Which why for the Sufi, love draws us back to God. Love eventually merges us into divine oneness. And Sufis have held for humanity the secret of divine oneness. I am he whom I love, he whom I love is me. This is the secret Sufis have been holding for humanity. And it is very alive. It is very, very dynamic. And this energy of oneness contains within it all the instructions of how to work with you, work with it. It won't tell you what you need to do, it only works with the present moment. And that is why it is so dynamic. It has no structure, it has no form, it is too dynamic for structure and form. It is present. It just has to, all you have to do is make a shift in consciousness to know that it's there. It is a totally different way of living. It is so fundamentally different, you can't even imagine, because even your imaginings belong to the past. All I know is that it works, it's very powerful, it's very effective. And it has the ability to bypass all the power structures, because it is not linear, it is organic. And it works not just individually, it works collectively. And the beauty is the whole collective humanity in the past 5 years has been given an image of it on the physical plane, which is the internet. The internet is a reflection, direct reflection onto the physical level. It's not really exists on the physical level, it's quite interesting, of how oneness works, because everything is present at each moment in time. And everybody has access to it. This is one of the reasons certain people don't want this to happen, because this energy is totally democratic. There is no hierarchy. Nobody has more access to it than anybody else. And this is why there are forces trying to stop this happen, trying to stop this knowledge to be given to humanity, because they like to be in charge, whether spiritually or materially. And it's happening in both planes. The structures of the future will be totally organic. It's already begin to be constellated on the inner planes. That was that dream about containing the substance of God. It is totally organic, masculine and feminine together, and it moves. It's very, very fluid. If you ever get a chance to see it in meditation, it is so beautiful. Things first constellate on the inner planes. This energy has not yet hit the physical plane, which is why there are no physical changes yet. It first has to be constellated on the intermediate zone, and that's part of the work we are doing together. And it does not matter at all if you don't believe anything I say. It is totally irrelevant. I just do my job. What you do with it is your business. But I'm quite fascinated by how it works. Because I am such a spiritual traditionalist. I thought it was like this and this and this, and suddenly it was all taken away, and I'm showing now it works like that. It's a lot of fun. I mean it. It is a lot of fun. It's very, very dynamic. It bounces off things. It comes alive in the most unexpected places. You can't control it. Either you're with it or you're not. This is again so beautifully imaged in the Hopi poem. The more I read this, the more I am honored to have this, see this reflected in this ancient North American spiritual tradition, because they're very spiritual people, the Hopis. There is a river flowing now very fast. It is so great and swift that there are those who will be afraid. They will try to hold on to the shore. They will feel they are being torn apart and will suffer greatly. The elders say we must let go of the shore. Push off into the middle. Keep our eyes open and our heads above the water. Very important instructions. Eyes open, be attentive, heads above the water. We can't do this work unconsciously. We have to become conscious. We have to remember who we are. If we do this work unconsciously, we will get caught in enormous forces of destruction. Because in any time of transition, the opposites are constellated. Creativity and destruction. You have to learn how to consciously go with the current. We are taken, yes, but it has to be conscious. That also has to do with our participation. Conscious participation. Being there, attentive. And it's very alive. It is very, very dynamic. It is coming slowly closer to the physical plane. I have no idea what will happen when this energy hits the physical plane. And we are allowed to be part of it. That's what I find so beautiful. We are allowed to participate. We don't have to make any grand gestures. We just lead our simple, ordinary life where we have been placed. And this energy comes through us. We are aligned with it. We bring it into our everyday life because that is where it is needed. Don't try to do anything spiritual. It is a disaster. You will then constellate your image of a spiritual life. It will be your image. It has nothing to do with life and very little to do with what is spiritual. We have to live where we are for His sake. Total participation. And have fun. Don't take it too seriously. Don't try to do it right. You don't know what is right. The rule book has not yet been written. Yes, one should lead a decent life. One should lead an ethical life. One should be caring. All of those basic practices are important. You know all of that. But don't try to change the world. Love God. He can change the world. My God, how He can change the world. Years ago, a friend in our group had a dream in which she was given an ancient Sufi teaching that Mrs. Tweedy had discovered. And it was, we don't try to change the color of the sky, we just love God. We don't try to change the color of the sky, we just love God. We are lovers, His own personal idiots. We're not very good at changing the world anyway. Other people can do that much better. But we can love God. How we can love God. That we can do, friends. We can love God. And then He can use us. And my God, how He can use us. He can use us on all levels of reality. I spoke the other day about different levels of reality. If we tried to do it ourselves, we'd probably just do it on the physical plane. He can use us. Right down from the unmanifest, through the heart, through the self, through the archetypal world, into the physical. That comes last. And yet we are present on the physical plane together. So we are honoring the physical plane. We are honoring what is present. We are honoring what is now. It's really being part of a tremendous spiritual adventure. And I have discovered that many people have been waiting for this. They have been wanting to take part in it. They thought they had to do something. No. We just have to say yes. That is what Sufis always say. That's why Andrew started his talk. Say yes. Yes. Beloved, I am here for you. I am thirsty for you. I am longing for you. I am lonely without you. You are my own beloved. And I am here in your world trying to do my bit, yes. And I miss you so much. Come to me. Use me. On my own, I am worthless. But with you, beloved, when I am lost in you, and yet also conscious here in this world. There are so many miracles waiting to happen, friends, if we create the right circumstance. There are certain doors waiting to be opened. We see around us a world destitute and starving, a world full of indulgence, full of contradictions. And we are part of it. We have asked to be part of it. And everything is according to His will, to the will of our Beloved. And we also incarnate that will in our daily life through the simple Sufi practices of remembrance, of being here, of being attentive to love. Of caring for our children, of cooking nice food for our family. People have even forgotten how to cook with the name of God. You know, when Mrs. Tweedy used to cook, there was so much love in the food. I hardly tasted the food, I tasted the love. Because she cooked with the name of God. We are so busy. We have forgotten how to cook with the name of God. How to clean with the name of God. She used to say, everything needs to be love because everything is part of creation. When you have a table, clean it with love. That's why you should never have more things than you can look after. Because then they aren't loved. And they begin to weigh heavily around you. Everything needs to be loved. Everything needs to be looked after with love. It's the simple things that matter. God is a simple essence. So thank you, friends. It's been a wonderful time to be together with you. We are continuing this adventure each year. A friend of mine had a lovely dream after the last conference, which was kind of the beginning, in which we all went up a hill and planted a tree and then danced around the tree to the spirit of the tree. And then she knew that each year we would all go up the tree, up the hill again, to look after the tree to see how it is doing. We have planted a tree of His love for us, danced around the tree, and those of you who want, you are welcome to come back again next year, same time, same place, different speakers. Well, I'll be here still. One can never escape from oneself. Anything else? Anything else I should say, Barbara? No questions, but... What? Yeah?
I'm wondering if we can take this wonderful energy and focus the divine consciousness on the government right now.
I'd just like to share a vision that I had last night. And it came, it wasn't any grandeur, it just suddenly was there. You know, the bookshop that we have here with all the books from all the different traditions. And every stand where the books were, every book was a bowl of fruit.
That's beautiful. Simple. Just a bowl of fruit.
So it means it's alive. Take it. Enjoy it.
Eat it.
Taste it.
Taste it. Taste it. Taste it. So friends, God bless. It's been wonderful to be with you here.